Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Today on the program, oil prices, farm auctions, and living life frugally. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Portland, Oregon, I'm Rima Khreis, in for Kai Rizdal. It is Monday, June 5th. Good to have you with us. After all the domestic economic drama at the end of last week, an 11th-hour debt ceiling deal, a blockbuster jobs report, there is now global economic drama over oil prices. OPEC Plus, the 23-country oil-producing alliance, had a pretty contentious meeting over the weekend. Basically, Saudi Arabia and its allies pushed to cut global production more than planned to help boost prices. And in the end, Saudi Arabia, you know, the group's de facto leader, decided it's going to take on that burden by itself. It'll cut production by 1 million barrels a day starting in July. So what might that mean for energy and gas prices? Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman starts us off.
This time last year, crude oil futures were soaring towards $120 a barrel. Gas was running $4.85 a gallon on average, according to AAA. Since then, crude's fallen by nearly half. The price at the pump is down more than a dollar. It's simple supply and demand, says Peter McNally, global analyst at Third Bridge. Plenty of crude for sale, with Russia still getting its oil to market cheap in spite of sanctions.
Inventories have been rising since the third quarter of last year as supply has exceeded demand. The Saudis and their allies do need to cut production in order to balance the market.
Balance the market, meaning try to boost oil prices or at least keep them from falling further. McNally says weak global energy demand, especially in China, is driving Saudi policy.
About half the world's oil demand growth for this year is expected to come out of China, and market participants are starting to feel a bit nervous about that those expectations won't be met.
And global recession fears are running high as well, says Mallory Newell at public opinion firm Ipsos.
So the perception right now for many people, both in the U.S. and across the globe, is that their country is in a recession. And on a daily basis, they're feeling the financial squeeze, eating into their savings, leaning on credit.
Even with Saudi Arabia cutting production, Peter McNally predicts the impact on global crude prices and U.S. pump prices will be limited.
For the next 6 months or so, you're looking at a situation where prices, at least on a year-on-year basis, are going to be lower.
Good for the overall inflation fight, good for U.S. consumers' pocketbooks. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The manufacturing sector has been kind of blah lately. We got some new data from the Institute for Supply Management. It shows that manufacturing contracted in May for the seventh month in a row. The sector was also a cool spot in Friday's hot jobs report. We asked Marketplace's Savannah Marr to take us into the world of manufacturing.
Early in the pandemic, Americans famously bought a lot of stuff. And until around late last year, U.S. factories were still playing catch up.
Backlogs are mostly what has sustained manufacturing,
says Jonathan Millar, an economist with Barclays. But those factory back orders have mostly been filled. And now, Millar says higher borrowing costs for consumers are putting a damper on demand.
It seems like we may be headed for a period of weakness.
So manufacturing firms may be at an inflection point, says Tim Fiore with the Institute for Supply Management. He says staffing up to meet that early pandemic demand wasn't easy. Now, do manufacturers hold on to those workers in hopes orders will tick back up?
They're probably going to have to make some decisions in the June-July timeframe here about overstaffing.
In other words, more layoffs could be coming. But there are bright spots, says Chad Moutre with the National Association of Manufacturers, like construction spending within the sector.
That number is just a huge hockey stick at this point, right? It's up a whopping 104.5% over the last year.
Moutray says a lot of that construction is fueled by federal investments in shoring up U.S. supply chains.
Semiconductor facilities being built, obviously given the push towards electric vehicles, new facilities being built for not just that production, but also for batteries.
He says manufacturers are focused on how they can grow once they come out of this sluggish period. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, traders were also feeling a little blah. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. For years now, there has been a steady drip of reporting on how work from home is hurting commercial office space. It's something we've talked about a lot on this program. And now we've got yet another data point. According to the real estate analytics firm Trepp, more owners of office properties are delinquent on their loans. In May, more than 3.33% of commercial loans were seriously delinquent. That's up from a year ago. As Marketplace's Henry Epp reports, the outlook for office building owners might get worse before it gets any better.
If the last few years have taught us anything, it's that it's really hard to know if and when more people will come back to offices. And if you own an office building, the bank holding your loan probably doesn't like that uncertainty, says Kevin Fagan at Moody's Analytics.
There's a lot of skepticism and uncertainty that drives down the ability to get debt financing if you're an office owner.
So Fagan says even more office building owners are likely to miss payments in the months ahead. Plus, when they refinance, they'll do so at higher interest rates, says Mark Vittner, chief economist at Piedmont Crescent Capital.
We're very much in the early innings of this.
If you're a renter, you might be able to get a better deal on space right now, but Vittner says most office renters aren't jumping in just yet.
It's not just the renters that are on the sidelines, but people that might be interested in buying an office building and repurposing it or refocusing it.
They're all waiting for the market to drop even further, he says. There is one bright spot where developers are making investments, the suburbs, says Ellen Dunham Jones, an urban design professor at the Georgia Institute of Technology.
They're going in and really trying to now provide the more urban amenities in those places that they never had before.
Housing, outdoor spaces, restaurants, and shops, Dunham Jones says, as developers bet that more people might come back to the office if it's a bit closer to home. I'm Henry Epp for Marketplace.
All right, now we're going to move from the office to the farm. If you live in a rural community and you need, say, a tractor, four-wheeler, maybe some land, a farm auction might be the kind of place you go to. But over the last few years since the pandemic, these traditional auctions have become, well, less traditional. The National Auctioneers Association estimates 70% of the industry's $3 billion in sales now come from the internet. Harvest Public Media's Elizabeth Rembert has that story.
Outside a Nebraska farmhouse, the voice of an auctioneer carries all the way down the gravel driveway. The farmer who lived here is retiring. His tractors, four-wheeler, and farm truck are lined up in rows, waiting to be sold to the highest bidder. Anthony Taney stands near the door of a shed, along with a couple hundred people who are here to browse. He's eyeing some of the equipment parked outside.
I'm going to bid on a few things out there.
But he's already lost out on some fishing rods he wanted for his grandkids.
Well, there's a guy they got.
Many people here know each other. They catch up over cups of coffee from the lunch stand. But they're not the only ones looking for a deal. Online shoppers are also bidding. Bidders are logging on from as far away as Montana to make offers. online auctions have been part of a growing trend since eBay came onto the scene in 1995. And then the pandemic cemented internet sales, says Nancy Kripe, who runs GRS Auctions in Missouri.
Because suddenly people couldn't gather in public, it certainly turned to online.
Turns out it's also just good business. Auctioneers say items go for as much as 50% more online. They just reach more buyers.
A broader audience equals more competition, and the more competition you have for an item, the better the return.
After 40 years of working in the auction business, Roy Montgomery has seen a lot of changes. He followed in his dad and grandpa's footsteps to become an auctioneer. Today, he pretty much only does internet auctions.
I'll be honest with you, I haven't had a live sale of my own in probably over 3 years. Grandpa wouldn't understand this at all.
At his shop in South Central Nebraska, Montgomery and his team sort through shelves that hold hundreds of antiques. There's an old tricycle with chipped red paint, a vintage Coca-Cola serving tray, and an antique jewelry box.
The box is in good shape, right?
It is in very good shape.
They photograph each item and create a listing in the portal for online bidders. Montgomery takes a look at who's biting.
That guy is from Nevada, Las Vegas. This guy is from Greensboro, North Carolina.
But for many communities, auctions are more than just a business transaction. In fact, at the farm sale, most people aren't here to bid on anything specifically. They're curious about, say, how much used tractors are going for these days, and to see old friends. Jim Schrader is here, and he's not even a farmer. He says these events aren't really about what's for sale.
Did you know that auctions, retirement auction is social? See, it's kind of like a retirement party. So a lot of his friends will be here to tell him, you know, say goodbye and stuff.
But the days of only vying against your neighbors for a deal are likely gone. Lauren Beachy, president of Indiana-based Bright Star Auctions, says almost all his company's sales have internet bidders. And as an Amish man who often serves Amish customers, Beachy has even come up with a way to loop in folks who don't use the internet.
We make a print catalog, and we keep a very dynamic mailing list of Amish buyers.
Those potential buyers call into a conference line to verbally bid.
Amish online bidding, if you will.
But bidding via phone or computer will never quite capture an auction's energy, Beachy says.
There's nothing like the excitement of a good brisk auction. I've never been to a rock concert, but I know that, you know, there's an element of electricity there and excitement.
After all the hep-hep-hos don't translate that well virtually. In Carroll, Nebraska, I'm Elizabeth Rembert for Marketplace.
Coming up.
I was just like, I wanted to go to Disney World. That has been one of my dreams.
It is the happiest place on earth. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Jones inched downwards by 200 points, 0.6%, to finish at 33,562. The Nasdaq subtracted 11 points, 0.1%, to close at 13,229. And the S&P 500 lost 8 points, 0.2%, to end at 4,273. The summer travel season is getting into full swing, with more than 2.6 million people traveling through TSA checkpoints on Sunday. That's about 250,000 more travelers than on the equivalent day last year, and only about 21,000 less than in 2019. While we're at it, let's look at some airline stocks, shall we? Southwest Airlines dwindled by 0.25%, Delta added 0.25%, and American Airlines was down 0.4%. Bonds rose, the yield on the 10-year T-note fell slightly to 3.68%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas, loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at Dell.com. Welcome to Now.
This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. You may have heard of the Marketplace podcast that I host. It's called This is Uncomfortable. And one of my favorite interviews on the show was with a listener, Wenwen Yang. She wrote in with a question. She asked, how do you navigate the middle class? Wenwen's family immigrated from China to New York City, and she grew up in a low-income household. But after she graduated, Wenwen got a corporate job in hospitality, and she started making more money than her parents combined. She'd officially entered the middle class. But at the same time, she felt like an outsider, struggling to pick up on the social norms and cues of a class she wasn't born into. My conversation with her was almost 4 years ago. I've been really curious to see how she's doing today, so we caught up over Zoom. Wenwen, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How's it going? Oh my God, it's been so long.
It's been a minute. How are you?
I am great. I'm curious. The last time we talked, you told me that you really craved a guidebook to the middle class.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel less self-conscious these days about your class background?
Yes. Yeah.
Why do you think you felt so much shame before?
Like now I feel further away from that time, right?
Yeah.
And the notions that people have about people being poor, it's like, it was your fault that this happened. It's just mm-hmm. like, no, that was a circumstance of my birth. Or that, you know, if you just work hard enough, you could bootstrap your way out. And I feel like I have encountered so much more language around mm-hmm. the fact that, no, there are systems that are hurting us and things are built up against us. And mm-hmm. that helped me come to terms with like, okay, right. I was just internalizing, you know, all the
right.
the hatred for poor people, as opposed to being like, oh, right. The system I was living in just was mm-hmm. wanting to keep people down.
Wow. That's a huge perspective shift.
Yeah.
Because yeah, before it sounds like you were really blaming yourself and your family.
Yeah, it's like, man, there's some really mediocre rich people that's like never fall down or they fall up somehow, right?
Right. Does it make you anxious to spend money?
Probably, yeah. I'm a very cheap person. Like, I bought the cheapest toaster, and my husband, he's just like, this thing seems like it's about to set us on fire. I'm like, no, it's fine, it's fine. And then, obviously, my toaster broke. when I depressed it, it didn't start warming up, and I'm just like, oh, this feels like it's about to set on fire.
It reminds me when you told me that you used to put, I think, duct tape over your shoes if they were falling apart.
Oh, I gorilla glued the shoes, yeah.
Yeah, gorilla glued.
Like, because I think my response to growing up poor was, I can't have the thing, so don't want the thing. And I sort of wish I got to want the thing again. Like, hey, I still haven't left the country. Maybe I should plan an international trip. But it's almost like I am too afraid to want the thing because, like, what if it, you know, I peek over the fence and go, oh, no, never mind. Actually, that is way more expensive than I thought it would be. I will afford this later, you know?
I am curious when you say that you're very frugal. Do you go out to eat?
No. Well, we do for our birthdays. So like once a year.
Okay. Well, if you're living so frugally, presumably you have a lot of savings or?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you feel comfortable sharing any specifics about your financial life?
Not on radio.
That's totally fair.
I have enough that if we were both unemployed for a year, we'll be okay.
So what are your financial goals? What do you hope to do with your savings?
So the goal is just like to make sure I have enough for however long I live for that to be a comfortable life. But also I remember applying for financial aid and asking my dad, you know, the FAFSA asks if your parents have retirement savings. And I asked him if he had any, and he says, no, you're my retirement plan. I was like, great.
Oh.
No pressure.
How do you feel about that?
I don't know. It's part of the culture. It's not something I can like run away from, right? It's mm-hmm. like, yes, I am still their kid. Like I can't let them fall like that.
So I'm curious, if you had to write out like your ideal plot line for how your life will unfold financially, what would that be?
To have no financial concerns and then be able to use that money to help others, like to keep passing it on. You know, like how PBS does the and viewers like you, thank you. Mm-hmm. Like to be named in one of those things. Like, yeah, this came from the Win Win Yang Foundation.
Yeah.
That would be amazing.
So it's like basically you want to be in a position where you're able to provide some financial security for other people.
Yeah. Yeah. Because like once you stop worrying about yourself, right? Like once your belly is full, then you worry about, oh, wait, I remember being hungry. I got to make sure my friends have food too. Like once the worry about myself is done, is reaching back and pulling the next person forward.
That was Wenwen Yang out of Dallas, Texas. If you want to hear her episode plus more personal stories about money, you can check out the Marketplace podcast that I host, This is Uncomfortable, wherever you get your podcasts. As you might imagine, one of the most popular wishes granted by Make-A-Wish Foundation of America is a trip to Disney World in Florida. That's been the case now for about four decades. Make-A-Wish is, of course, the nonprofit that helps fulfill the wishes of children who are critically ill. What you can also imagine is that those wishes have been a lot trickier to grant since the pandemic. Recently, though, as travel's opened up again, some children and their families are making that coveted trip to Florida. But as WUNC's Leonida Inge explains, there is a pretty major backlog.
There is nothing ordinary about a visit to Disney World for Make-A-Wish kids.
You guys ready to go meet Mickey? Want to go
meet Mickey?
That's a scene from a promotional video featuring families with critically ill children visiting Disney World. When the pandemic years drastically slowed down travel, many Wish kids found themselves on a Disney wait list. Kristen Terry and her son Caden live in Morrisville, North Carolina. By 2020, their family had already been waiting for Caden's trip to Disney for months.
When the pandemic hit, it changed everything.
And ruined it for me. There has been so many times Mom was just like, Caden, we might be doing the wish trip soon. Nope.
11-year-old Caden crosses his legs and sits up straight when he tells his story. He's had to grow up fast. He survived 10 surgeries for a congenital heart defect, and he'll probably need more. Kristen Terry says her son has waited more than 3 years for that Disney trip.
There were a lot of times when we would get an email asking, you know, hey, do you guys still want to do this trip or do you want to change your wish? And we had thought about it.
But changing his wish didn't sit well with Caden.
I was just like, I wanted to go to Disney World. That has been one of my dreams for a long time.
Yeah.
Chris Winter is president and CEO of Make-A-Wish Eastern North Carolina. He says there are more than 400 children in his region alone waiting for their wish to come true.
More than half of our wishes are Disney wishes and specifically also travel wishes. And that, as you can imagine, was one kind of wish that was most impacted by the pandemic.
Make-A-Wish had to encourage children to choose something else during the pandemic. Some kids went for shopping sprees. Others were happy to get a puppy. Wishes for new pets increased by almost a third. But a lot of kids held out for that Disney trip. Francis Hall is chief mission officer for Make-A-Wish America. With travel possible again, she says they have been chipping away at the long wait list for Disney.
They're really providing a record number of wishes for us. If we have a wish that needs to go this summer, such as a rush wish, we are able to get that wish in.
That's good news for thousands of critically ill children and their families. And for Caden, he and his parents and baby brother finally made it to Disney World this year. His mom, Kristen Terry, says Caden talks about it all the time.
What did you keep saying?
That I loved it.
He kept saying that all of his surgeries have finally paid off.
It was really nice. We went to the pool to watch a movie. We went to do some rides there. I went horseback riding.
And Caden says it was worth the wait. In Raleigh, North Carolina, I'm Leonida Inge for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, there's news from Spotify that it's cutting back on its podcast division. It's reducing its staff by 200 people in what's become a second round of layoffs. Last time, back in January, 600 people lost their jobs. The layoffs come at a time where there, of course, is a lot of economic uncertainty. Tech companies like Spotify say they're facing a lot more pressure to cut costs and bring up those profits. Before we head out, your moment of economic context. I saw this headline recently and my first thought was, wait, what? It was reported that the highly anticipated Barbie movie wiped out an entire company's global supply of pink paint. To be fair, Roscoe, the company responsible for that paint, was dealing with supply chain issues because of the pandemic. It was also recovering from the deep freeze in Texas in 2021, which damaged some of its materials. But still, that is a lot of pink paint. Life in plastic. It is fantastic, but it also sounds very expensive. All right, our daily production team includes Livy Burdett, Andy Corbin, Richard Cunningham, Nicholas Guillong, Maria Hollenhorst, Sarah Leeson, and Sean McHenry. And I'm Rima Reis. We'll be back tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.